As the May 19th primary fast approaches, one of the widest races on the ballot is that for Multnomah County Circuit Court Judge Position 12. Interestingly, the Circuit Court has not seen a competitive race for some years, as typically judges are appointed when another resigns and are rarely challenged on the ballot. Today we speak with John Schlosser, who has been a criminal defense attorney for over 10 years with a focus on protecting immigrants and their families, as well as being a board member of Pueblo Unido, a local organization that advocates for the rights of immigrants. Let's listen.
So what inspired you to run for this position?
I mean, as far as this position goes, I wanted to be a judge. Didn't always want to be a lawyer. That was the last thing I wanted earlier in my life. But I came to it later in life, and when I was in law school, I was drawn to criminal law. I wanted to be a prosecutor, and I had a mentor who was a judge here in Multnomah County. He'd been a prosecutor. But he and I were pretty similar. He had thought about being a defense attorney first. I ended up being a defense attorney. So we could kind of swap that way. But what he would tell me is he was always more satisfied with his job as a judge than he was with the DA. It's not like he felt like he didn't help people there, but he felt like he could help more people. And my whole life, that's what my parents raised me, was service to the community. And so he was always in the back of my mind, wanting to be a judge eventually. Back in my mind for a while, and then a couple of years ago, the judge I really respected retired, Diana Stewart. So I started going through the appointment process and learning more about how the judges had come to take the positions, and how there hadn't been an election for a judicial candidate in well over 10 years. I guess I just promised myself that if a seat ever came open, I'd run.
So you mentioned you worked as a criminal defense attorney, for some years now, and you've also been on the board of Pueblo Unido, a local organization that advocates for the rights of immigrants. What have those experiences taught you, and how would you take those lessons into the judgeship?
The biggest lesson I learned was that, and I think this is something that we all need to learn, but that I learned fairly quickly, about a year and a half ago, I started a different job within St. Helens. But before that, for about 6 years, I was the main public defense attorney for Spanish-speaking people charged with criminal offenses, at least misdemeanors in Multnomah County. So all of my clients, or not all, but 95% were non-citizens or not born here. And what I learned there and what led me to actually working with Pueblo Unido was that I have no idea what the person sitting across from me wants or what is most important to them. And I think that's true of any client, but especially when you're dealing with people who come from a completely different culture, that or background, you have to put aside what you think would be best for them. Like, I could give them my opinion on what's best for them in the legal case, right? But they might have different opinions about what's most important to them. For instance, immigration status, or not, maybe not. Maybe that's not what's most important to them. I had plenty of clients who I was like, look, let's worry about your immigration consequences. And they're like, no, I don't care. I'm just here to help my family or whatever the case may be. And I learned really quickly not to assume I know what the other person wants or what's best for them. And to work with organizations that are led by, at least organizations that work with or for minority groups, that you only work with groups that are led by or staffed by from those groups.
In your platform, you've expressed interest in restorative justice, which broadly points to rehabilitation of offenders and restitution of harm rather than punishment. What power does a judge have to enact that sort of justice, and how would you work towards that?
Well, by themselves, they don't really have a lot of ability to do that. We're bound by what is in front of us and what options are available. There has to be laws or policies in place to do things. We have those scenarios in Multnomah County, well, in Oregon generally, already. Of them, we have drug courts, mental health courts, veteran courts, although veteran courts are sad, not nearly as expansive or well fleshed out as they clearly should be, in my opinion. But there's always room for more, and trying to reduce recidivism, I think, is should be one of the judges' main, if not the main, goal when you are handling a criminal case. And so, in this scenario, to start, what I would like to do is start a restorative justice court, especially court. It would not be something I can do on my own. It's something that I have to get buy-in from the DA's office or whoever the incoming elected district attorney is going to be, and from the defense bar, and the community, for that matter, and victims. It's restorative justice court is kind of like a mediation in that you know, you bring everybody to the table, and everybody has to be willing. And you can't have a restorative justice court where a victim who doesn't want to see the person who harmed them, it's not going to work. You can't have a restorative justice court where the offender, you know, isn't willing to really sit down and open up and make amends. But it's doable, and it's just one of the, I think, the tools in the community's chest of tools towards helping of the bigger picture of restorative justice and helping to heal our communities.
So you spoke to this a little bit, but what sort of structural issues are there in our criminal justice system that pose challenges to restorative justice?
It takes a progressive-ish, I don't know if that's really the right word, but it takes a district attorney's office that is willing to look for new options, right? Willing to take chances on people. And it, you know, it's not easy. It takes time. And it's a lot easier, I suppose. I'm not putting this on anybody, but I can see where district attorney's office could say it's a lot easier and faster to just roll through cases to the normal plea and sentencing court process. Although I don't think that historically the Multnomah County district attorney's office has looked at things that way. You know, we have gold star level drug treatment courts here that, you know, courts from all over the U.S. come to shadow and create their own drug courts around. So I don't think that necessarily a huge hindrance, but it's new and it's different, and it'll take time to develop. Funding issues, right? I think that's another big issue, and it goes beyond just the restorative justice court itself, but not that there aren't funding issues all over in every department of the government and things like that, but you know, the courts have historically been underfunded as for the public defense offices, and in order to create a court like this, you have to have, you know, funding to do it. And frankly, I think increases in judicial funding should primarily be focused towards expanding the specialty courts that we have already in place in the state, making sure that they are available in every county, fully funded in every county. And for that matter, you have to have a fully staffed, to have a DA's office that's funded enough to staff the position. I mean, Columbia County is a good example. The DA's office there, the only reason they can have a specialty court program at all is they have a grant to pay for one district attorney position. I mean, otherwise, Columbia County wouldn't have specialty courts, and that's scary, right? So you have to have buy-in from the defense, from the prosecution, and from the court, and then you have to, you know, figure out how to pay for it.
Right. So to pivot a little bit, you've cited the ban on warrantless ICE arrests in Multnomah County courts as one that you're keen to enforce. Can you tell me a little bit about what the impact of that ban is?
I don't really know yet what the impact is. I haven't heard of any ICE activity in the courthouses since the ban went into effect, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened, right? I haven't heard of any. That doesn't mean that they're not still enforcing, right? They just shift where they're enforcing. They could still pick people up right outside the courthouse on the, you know, on the sidewalk for that matter. Keeping them out of the courthouse at least gives a victim, a plaintiff, a defendant, I hope it gives them a little peace of mind that they can get dropped off right out front, be inside the courthouse, and not have to be looking over their shoulder, right? I mean, it's been terrible, the impact of having ICE enforcement going on in our courthouses has had on people's willingness to come to court, people's willingness to testify against their abusers, right? People's willingness to proceed with civil cases, for that matter, again, in situations where maybe they're being taken advantage of because they're afraid that something might happen to them. And you know, the court is supposed to be open and available for everybody. And that, I think, is really the heart of Chief Justice Walter's order.
What is one issue in this election that you think doesn't get enough attention?
In this particular election, geez, I don't know. There's not a lot we can talk about. You know, we can't talk about issues, but...
Or maybe something that's, like, commonly misunderstood?
Okay, well, I think one thing that's commonly misunderstood is that judges are, or have to be, maybe, judges have to be... these very stoic, rigid, you know, figures, and has to be all this formality and everything. That's not who I am. I'm not hung up on rigid formality. Never have been. I wouldn't be in the courtroom either. This isn't to say, you know, that there aren't rules in place that have to be followed, but for instance, I believe the court, Multnomah County Court, used to have a ban on having hats or headwear in the courthouse. They've modified that now, so it's left up to the judge. I really couldn't care less if somebody was wearing a headpiece, whether it was religious or otherwise. Right? I mean, things don't have to be scary and intimidating in there. If you're fortunate enough to have an attorney, you know, they can deal with that pretty scary stuff. I want my courtroom to be a place where people feel comfortable.
Do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners?
I guess one thing that I have, people have asked me, not in a public forum like this before, but people have asked me why I chose to run in an election again as a white man against with a bunch of underrepresented people on the bench, and all I can say to that is I thought about this long and hard. If it wasn't a white man that was retiring, I wouldn't run. And I'm not overly vocal about this, but I am a minority member of the LGBTQ community. I don't want people to think that I'm just going to be some old white guy wanting to come in and continue to control the system. Please feel free to email me. I've had people from the community sending emails with questions, which is great in this climate because you can't I'm more than happy to have communication if people want.
And what's that email address?
John Schlosser for Judge, which I understand is probably difficult. It's johnschlosserforjudge@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for speaking with us today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with John Schlosser, a candidate for Multnomah County Circuit Court Judge Position 12. More information on Schlosser and his candidacy is available at votejohnforjudge.com. Additionally, Schlosser is hosting a Reddit Ask Me Anything session at 6 p.m. this evening with the account at votejohnforjudge. Ballots must be sent by mail by May 14th or dropped off at ballot drop-off points by May 19th. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.